Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
I am talking about the war being waged in America today against the American middle class.
So I'm going to do everything I can to try to get that deck reshuffled so being middle class means something again.
Politicians often talk about protecting the middle class. What about the millions of people living below the middle class? 140 million people are either living in poverty or are low income, and millions of them don't vote. A new report explores the voting potential of this population, Unleashing the Power of Poor and Low-Income Americans, Changing the Political Landscape, was released this month by the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. The report is authored by Robert Paul Hartley, assistant professor of social work at Columbia University. Hartley joins me today, as does Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign and director of the Cairo Center for Religions, Rights, and Social Justice. Reverend Theo Harris says poor and low-income people who make up 43.5% of the U.S. population need to be politically represented.
How can you have a true and vibrant democracy when you're ignoring basically half of your population? How can you have politicians and candidates who run never talking about the issues that impact a large segment of your population? How can it be that, you know, we can have had stimulus packages passed over the past couple of months for this pandemic, and who gets the lion's share of it are the wealthy and corporations, and the people who need it the most have been forgotten completely, and that this doesn't make for a strong society. It isn't democracy, and it doesn't have to be this way. I mean, it's not that the country doesn't have the resources to lift the load of poverty. It's that right now our political priorities are about benefiting Wall Street, bailing out banks, protecting the profits of the largest corporations, and not the lives and well-being of the people.
And right now, the pandemic and its economic fallout are happening in an election year. And these 140 million people we're talking about, this was pre-pandemic. These are pre-pandemic numbers. There are millions more who are unemployed and who might get themselves evicted from their homes, their apartments, which means that there are millions of people who have never known poverty or known how to live in a low-income situation. And also many of these millions are also voters. And Rob, that's where I want to turn to you. You recently published a study, Unleashing the Power of Poor and Low-Income Americans, Changing the Political Landscape. Do you think that this pandemic might really supercharge these millions of people, the millions who have just recently lost work, and the millions who are finding themselves in even worse situations than they were before?
So, yeah, I mean, this is a very important time to be thinking about whose interests are getting represented in our elections. Because as we were saying, the number of people considered low income pre-pandemic was really large. It's just a large number. And this isn't just the poverty line, right? It's people with incomes below 200% of the poverty line. So these are people who are not well off. And in fact, these are people who are at higher risk of entering into poverty in the next year. So the report says, yes, there are a lot of non-voters who have low incomes, and they could really matter in some key states. With this pandemic, many people now know what the risks of poverty mean for them and how lasting some of these risks could be. If you have health emergencies and incur great debt, like how long does it take you to get back out of poverty? These are really, really strong issues that I think a lot of people can relate to so much more now. And I think there's a lot of motivation coming into this election.
Well, Reverend Theo Harris, it's argued that the concerns of the poor have an impact on everyone. That's an argument made by the Poor People's Campaign. But why is it? And again, we're returning back to talking points by politicians. You don't hear those concerns. But Why is it that these politicians must focus on these concerns of poor and low-income Americans? Why is it that these concerns have an impact on everybody?
So this is a great question. I'd like to use an example about wages. There are 62 million people in this country, again, before the pandemic, who are making less than $15 an hour in their jobs. But if we were to raise the minimum wage to a living wage immediately for all workers, the minimum wage, it would mean that we'd have almost $300 million brought immediately into the economy. Now, that isn't going to just, you know, make it more possible for people to make their ends meet, pay their housing bills for those low-wage workers. That's going to mean the small businesses in the area. That's going to mean the community development organizations in the area are all going to benefit from that influx of money. So the issues that impact poor people then have an impact on the rest of society. Issue like health care. Right now, it's not just people who are the poorest in our society who don't have adequate health care, but poor people and the right to health care is an issue that should be being taken up by our politicians. The fact that we still have more than a dozen states that haven't expanded Medicaid, including in a public health pandemic, and included in a moment when people have lost their employer-sponsored health care. So we already had 87 million people in this country who didn't have adequate health care. And then we've added about 27 million people to that number. So these are issues that, again, impact so many people, impact the majority of our society, and that when we have candidates who don't put forward the demands and don't meet the needs of all Americans, then everybody suffers. I mean, we have a saying in our work that when you lift from the bottom, everybody rises, right? So if you raise minimum wage to a living wage, if you guaranteed health care, if you make sure that water is affordable, if we have strong programs around housing and education, that this indeed actually doesn't just impact poor and low-wage workers, but it redounds to the benefit of all. And so it really is hurting our nation to have anybody that is experiencing these issues, let alone to have such a large number and to not have our political system have to be accountable to all people, including the poor and the wealthy.
Well, how do you use that argument against people who believe that if you give more money to the people at the top, it's going to trickle down and benefit those on the bottom?
Well, I think that we should look at just even the last couple months of this pandemic. I mean, what we know is that the richest in our society, because of tax cuts, because of making more profits off of websites like Amazon or Google, the richest in our nation have made $755 billion in this pandemic. And not any of that has been trickling down. And if we look at generations of tax cuts for the wealthy, what we have seen is an increase in the number of people that are having trouble making their ends meet. And so this idea of trickle-down economics is actually just a myth. But what we know isn't is when you build strong social programs, strong, you know, living wages from the bottom up, that then does actually lift communities, makes it possible for businesses to flourish, but also makes it so that people in the richest nation on the face of the earth aren't dying from poverty and inequality. The Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University published this study some years ago that says that in this, the richest country in the world, 250,000 people die every year because of poverty and inequality. That is a dead weight on this society. Those deaths are unneeded. As a Christian pastor, they're not that God called those people home. It's that they've been killed by a society that has overlooked the needs and demands of the poor and relied too much on tax cuts for the wealthy and trickle down when what we need is bottom-up solutions.
Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris is co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. We're also talking to Robert Paul Hartley, author of the report Unleashing the Power of Poor and Low-Income Americans, Changing the Political Landscape. When we come back, low-income voters have the ability to flip elections, even in Texas.
So it looks like there's a strong potential voice in Texas for low-income voters to kind of change what expected outcomes for Texas might look like.
The conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Only 59% of registered voters in Texas cast a ballot in the 2016 presidential election. It's a number considered high when compared to primary or local elections. Many registered voters in Texas are poor and low income, and their needs are not being met by their elected officials. Texas did not expand Medicaid. Texas has the highest number of uninsured people in the country. It's not easy to register to vote in Texas, and once you're registered, voters must still contend with tough voter ID laws. Mail-in ballots are being demonized as potentially fraudulent. The odds would appear to be stacked against poor and low-income people who want to cast a vote in November. A new report examines the voting potential of poor and low-income people in Texas and other states. Unleashing the Power of Poor and Low-Income Americans, Changing the Political Landscape was authored by Robert Paul Hartley, assistant professor of social work at Columbia University. The report was released by the Poor People's Campaign, and we're also joined today by Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. Hartley explains how the political landscape of Texas could change if more poor and low-income people exercised their voting power.
I was surprised to see Texas as one of the 15 states where it looked like increased low-income voter participation could actually change an outcome. And the way we got to kind of answering that question was, I started off by thinking about the low-income non-voting population as a percent of the total electorate. And for Texas, that's close to 1 out of 5 of all eligible voters. What I do in the report is kind of move to this thought experiment of what if low-income voters were to increase their turnout? So for example, if 27% of those who are low-income and non-voting began participating, that would have equaled the margin of victory in the 2016 presidential election. But then to take it a step farther, what if low-income voters were to vote at the same rate as higher-income voters? So if the 27% that I just quoted that matched the margin of victory, if those 27% moved into actually voting, it wouldn't change the outcome unless they 100% of them voted against the party that won. So that would be the Republicans in 2016. But if they voted at the same rate as higher-income voters, and let's assume that they don't just split the votes 50-50, all of these new voters that might come in, what percentage of these new voters would have to vote against the Republican Party, for example, for Texas? And it would be 87%. And again, these are conservative estimates of who's low income. So if there was a larger low income population, it would only make it look kind of more reachable. So it looks like there's a strong potential voice in Texas for low income voters to kind of change what expected outcomes for Texas might look like.
Well, Reverend, I mean, it could be easily be argued that this is going to be the most important election in our generation. And I was talking a little bit earlier about obstacles to voting, the obstacles that Texas has in place, for example. There are obstacles in place that keep people from voting who live in low-income neighborhoods. There are not enough voting locations. There are few and far between. There's not enough transportation. So would you call that purposeful voter suppression?
So yes. So we have, you know, since 2010, a whole array of voter suppression laws that have been, you know, unleashed, particularly on poor communities and communities of color. So we have fewer voting rights today than we did 54 years ago, despite the fact that people have fought and died for those voting rights. And then you, on top of that, as you were suggesting, have the kind of voter suppression that makes it really hard for families, for low-income people, for grandparents to go out and vote. And that's the closing up of polling places in poor communities where people now have to wait in long lines. That's kind of voter disenfranchisement, whether it's because of economic crimes that people have committed that make them not able to vote, or whether that's because of particular rules around voter ID. Also, the fact that we have automatic registration for the draft at 18, but not for voting. We make it hard. We don't have same day registration everywhere. We don't have an election day to be a holiday. I mean, all of this gets in the way, especially when you're talking about poor and low income voters. Folks are having to work 2-3 jobs. Sometimes polling places are closing before people are off of work. And this was all before a pandemic that has put the Postal Service in jeopardy, that has put people having to decide if they're going to risk getting sick just to cast their vote. And yes, in a year when an election really matters, when we've had an assault on immigrant rights, an assault on people of color with the rise of racist policing, when we've had more and more states basically make cuts to their social safety net so that there's fewer and fewer social programs. All of this put together is really a very dangerous kind of recipe for more voter suppression and for an impoverished democracy where those that are elected then don't really represent the needs and demands of the people and really make us question whether this is a real democracy, which is, you know, something that our society is supposed to be upholding.
I had mentioned earlier that I thought it was a little surprising to see Texas show up as a state that might potentially flip, given this sort of thought exercise. The report is framed in terms of the potential for low-income voters, right? And if you think about voter suppression as increasing the amount of low-income non-voters, then that's also increasing the potential of low-income non-voters, right? So there's actually maybe a connection between the fact that I found that in my list of states that could possibly change outcomes if low-income non-voters showed up more, it includes Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Texas. These are all states showing up as high potential if they were to come turn out.
So here in Bexar County, there are propositions to possibly opening a 24-hour center for voting or sort of have a mega vote center available to people who can. Here in Bexar County, by the way, we're not limited to a precinct, so we can place our vote where it's convenient to our work, to our home, etc. And so our county here is trying to expand and make voting a little bit easier for people in the midst of a pandemic. But yet we still have these fears that if you're going to go out and cast your vote, either in early voting or on election day, you're running the risk of getting sick. And unfortunately, the high numbers of people who are low income and poor, they don't have health insurance. Maybe they're going to be dissuaded from wanting to go to the polls because of the risk of getting sick and eventually having to be hospitalized and paying hospital bills that you can't afford. Reverend Theo Harris, what would you say to people who might have these fears? How do you encourage them to go out and vote?
So I think there's two answers here. One is, if you're a person who is having to work multiple jobs or whose family is in a precarious position of potentially losing your housing, you as an individual and as a group of people who are not alone, this report shows the power of poor and low-income voters being able to change who runs for elections, being able to change what issues are taking up in elections, and being able to determine the outcomes, right? But it also is a message to candidates, which is that you have to give people something to be willing to vote for, right? If this is going to be a high-stakes election, not just for who gets elected, but for those who have to perhaps not work some hours because they're going to be in long waiting lines or fear getting sick in a pandemic without health care, then you have to stand for the issues and the demands that people are needing and putting out there. And so, you know, what we've seen over the past couple of months is our politicians have not expanded health care in a pandemic. Our politicians have not done much more than serve the needs of the wealthy. And so people have been telling us all across this country, from the California to the Carolinas, from the border to the Bronx, that they're going to turn out and vote, and they're going to vote around the issues that concern them and the 140 million people who are poor and low income. But again, a message to candidates and to parties, you know, take up the issues and demands of the people, because that's what people are putting out there, and this is supposed to be a democracy. And so I think there's a message to people that you matter and your vote matters, and there's a message to politicians of, do you hear us, because we're making ourselves heard.
Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris is co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, and director of the Cairo Center for Religions, Rights, and Social Justice. We were also speaking with Robert Paul Hartley, assistant professor of social work at Columbia University and author of the report, Unleashing the Power of Poor and Low-Income Americans, Changing the Political Landscape. Read the report and hear more of my conversation with Hartley and Reverend Theo Harris online at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.